You're listening to the Mindful Psychology Podcast, a podcast designed to explore mindfulness, psychology, neuroscience, and various aspects of holistic health. My name is Jen, I'm your host. I'm also a therapist, an educator, and a yoga teacher. Join me and brilliant guests as we explore various topics and offer you actionable steps so that you can be informed and intentional about your health and well-being. Now sit back, relax, maybe take a notebook out, and let's dive in. And welcome to a brand new episode. Today we're joined by another very special guest. Chris, thank you so much for joining us. Where are you joining us from today?
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm joining from Boston, Massachusetts in the United States. Yeah. Awesome.
Thank you so much for being here. And can you go ahead and introduce yourself? I want to make sure that you do it so that I don't mess anything up or not say all the right things. So can you go ahead and tell us a bit about who you are, the work that you do, how you got into the work that you do, and anything else you want to share?
Indeed. Again, thank you for having me. It's so nice to connect with you and your audience. So I am a behavior science professor. I teach themes around ways we can foster human resilience during a global mental health crisis. And my most recent thing that I'm really excited to share with everyone is that I just launched my third book, and it's called Worth the Risk: How to Microdose Bravery to Grow Resilience, Connect More, and Offer Yourself to the World.
I love that. Congratulations. That's a really big deal. That's amazing.
Thank you. Thank you. I love it. I love writing. I feel like it's a big part of my identity. It's very therapeutic. And I think especially with everything that we're all going through right now, I believe so much in, you know, using writing as a way of connecting and sharing science and sharing stories so that we can all, you know, work to face our fear and anxiety with more tools.
Yeah, I agree. And how did you decide to go into this kind of, I mean, before the pandemic and before all of these things, obviously you were building this career and writing other books and doing all this work. And so how did you get into all of that?
I always laugh. I feel like it started at a young age for me. I was always just really interested in people's stories. And, you know, I think I was impacted. I think very empathic and sensitive to struggle. And I myself also have a lived experience with anxiety and depression. I was always kind of that classic overthinker and overachiever, hard on myself, afraid that I was maybe letting people down or, you know, just not really feeling a sense of complete settledness in the world. And those difficult experiences caused me to eventually reach out and get my own therapy and really seek professional help. And when I did that, I saw how much traction I could get, you know, the power of that relationship of someone that can really see us and care about us and help us leverage strengths. And I realized that was the kind of life's work that I wanted to do. So for the past 20 years, I've served in outpatient mental health. I've done a lot of work around the world with companies and organizations, especially higher ed, to work to create healthier mental health cultures. You know, because we have a lot of messages screaming at us that we're not doing enough and that we're a failure if we don't have our own nonprofit by the time we're 20. Yeah. And there's just a lot of messaging out there that is harmful. So for me, my teaching and writing and public platform is a way for me to help people rethink those things and find their path towards bravery and resilience.
I really love that. Yeah, this is a really important conversation, actually, because I think we are bombarded with that and it does become crippling and we don't really know what to say or what to think or what to feel. And it becomes a lot. Like, how do you tell someone that it's okay to not do all the other things you think everyone else is doing? Or how do you tell someone like, oh, but it's not real, or you don't know the whole story? Like, that doesn't actually comfort someone, right? Like, it has to come from within. There has to be another switch, I think, rather than just, I don't know, these extra things we say, or oh, it's all good. I don't know, these sort of band-aid statements, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So what's your take on all of that? Just to start diving into this.
I love how you put that. And I think there are a lot of things out there, a lot of toxic positivity and motivational stuff. And it can be very oblivious to the fact that we're all actually marinating in a lot of trauma right now, a lot of fear. Even before the pandemic, across the world, we were seeing escalating burnout and mental health issues, and loneliness being called the new smoking as a health risk. So we've seen a lot of this kind of despair for a long time, and a lot of this feel-good pop psychology stuff just doesn't cut it. And especially for anyone out there listening, if you are that person who is really hard on yourself, if you want to, you know, achieve excellence without burning out, this message is for you. And I think, again, it's my professional training, but also something I've come to really have to work hard at to keep myself in check, because there's just so much messaging in our culture. Like, to your point, there's so much social comparison in social media, for example, mm-hmm. and we sort of get a lot of messages about what the world says we should be. And what we see in the science and in the research is that's not the kind of stuff that actually makes us live a fulfilled life and a life of meaning and purpose and satisfaction. So there's like all this happiness, like do this and be happy. And that kind of stuff can actually get in the way of our well-being.
Hmm. Yeah. And how can those things get in our way? I think I'm asking because I think some people might think, well, how does having it all, and I'm putting air quotes, make mm-hmm. someone unhappy? Like, how could those things make someone unhappy? Everyone seems so happy. What would be the reframe start to be?
Yeah. Thank you. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. Think of, you know, things we've seen. We've seen, you know, Kate Spade lose her life to suicide. And that was, I think, you know, she was sort of an embodiment of someone who seemed to have these metrics of so-called success. So I think it starts, I think the good news is if you are an overachiever or overthinker or maybe like a perfectionist type of person, you have the brain power to reimagine so-called success. I'm using my air quotes too right now, success, right? Because success has become so narrowly defined, almost like we're human doings, not human beings. You know, it's like, you know, and it's all this propaganda of like, you have to have this handbag or the red bottom shoes or the Tesla or the letters after your name or the likes on your feed or money in your bank or all this status or these narrow identities. Like, how many times have we seen even families say, oh, we'd be so proud if you became a doctor or a lawyer? Like, there's all these ideas that have existed for a long time and are especially amplified in today's culture that bait us to think that success comes with all these things. But the hard thing is so many people chase after that, and then they find themselves in a position of exhaustion, burnout, confusion, disillusionment, because those things that were all sold to us ended up being, you know, the cause of us not actually enjoy what we're striving for. We can't even enjoy it because we're just too fried, too exhausted.
Yeah, yeah. And there's also this idea that like you accomplish one thing and then you're like on to the next. You don't even realize what you've accomplished. You don't even see your progress anymore. It's just always, it must be more, always more. It never ends. Like, you know, I feel like that's something that's often come up, is just, I feel like I need to do more. Or when everything kind of slowed down for the last couple of years, everyone's like, well, I haven't done this in 2 years. I haven't done that. I haven't done that. You know, I need to do so much now. I've lost so much time. And it's like, fair enough. Like, a lot of things were on hold for a couple of years, but it should be more, I think, to get you to be like healthy and safe again and be able to just live and experience life again. That's totally fair. But that we need to accomplish things because it's been 2 years since we did anything noteworthy. I feel like that's so discouraging, you know, like it's so much pressure. You know what I mean? I don't know. That's what I find about that. But how are some ways that we can start to reprogram? Like, what are some healthier ways to think? And actually, before we go into that, when you mentioned the word resilience, and I really like that. So what do you mean by resilience when you talk about it?
Well, the amazing thing about resilience is that we as a species, we as human beings are wired for it. And all it means is that we have the capacity to adapt and endure adversity and work through it. So modern science and research is showing resilience is a process that we can invest ourselves in. It's not something we're born with or not, or it's not just about being, you know, the toughest or the smartest person in the room. It's something we all can tap into very strategically.
Yeah. Okay. I like that. And I like the difference between being like the distinction that you just made. And so if we, in keeping with that, how can we start to think differently about all of these things? Like, how can we start to think, okay, maybe those things aren't everything, or maybe burnout is not worth it, or, mm-hmm. you know, or are these not things that we say? Well, what do you think?
Well, as you pointed out, people think that more is more. That's the kind of messaging that's very pervasive. Mm-hmm. So the approach we can take with regards to building resilience and positive behavior change and resisting these messages of the culture that can be harmful is to take a microdosing approach to building bravery and courage in the face of, again, like a very hyper-competitive global market. It's like everybody wants to get into their top tier institutions or get the right jobs or, you know, be able to have these things that are, you know, that seem important. So I advocate for like a bit by bit, step by step, small, like, you know, less is more approach to facing fear and anxiety. And what I mean by that is, you know, when we face this kind of enormity, you know, I think we've been marinating in trauma and acute stress for a long time. It can feel like almost those same messages of the culture. It can make us feel like, okay, now we have to be, you know, superheroes or grit bots, and we have to, like, you know, do this big thing in order to have solid well-being. And ultimately, that's not what science shows, and that's not how people change and make those incremental steps that are important. So I would just encourage anyone listening, if you feel overwhelmed, if you feel like you're biting your nails constantly and, you know, just really stressed, is to look at what are some small ways that you can make changes to show up with greater courage. And so that could be, I think the number one could be being more willing to ask for help and admit the two sides of our stories. Like, on one hand, we could be doing well and we could be achieving and contributing positively in life. And at the same exact time, we could feel like a hot mess, like a walking disaster, like we don't, you know, we're not okay. And that is part of our shared humanity. A way that I might put it is we need to move away from that old school 1950s stigmatized mental health condition framing to human condition, that whenever we're subject to trauma and difficulty, we are going to suffer. But it doesn't mean that we need to stay stuck. We can face it step by step. But the key thing is, if we think we're going to do that alone, it's going to be a lot more difficult.
Yeah, I agree. I completely agree. And I like so much of what you said here. Like, we're going to unpack a few different things. So the first thing that I wanted to ask you based on that is, when you talk about the two sides of a story, like on one hand, you might be achieving, you might be doing all these things, but then you're a hot mess. So what might asking for help mean? Like, what might that do for us inside? Like saying, okay, I need help with this, or I'm not doing as well as I think. What does it do inside of us?
So if I were going to take a microdose approach to that, the first thing I would do if I were a person, and this is true, I mean, I am a person that struggles with a lot of anxiety. I think the first thing to do, it might not be to announce it to the world, like that might not necessarily be safe.
Right.
But I would think about, who do I trust? Mm-hmm. Who can I go to share what is happening for me? And I know that they will be able to be kind and responsive, that they'll get it, and they'll be able to, you know, help me figure out, you know, what my approaches could look like. So I think that first step is finding community, people that get you, people that are non-judgmental. And that could come like in a friend, a mentor, a family member. It could also come through getting in touch with a therapist. But I think ultimately just finding someone that feels safe and that can really be willing to be there for you, and that you feel you can admit that vulnerability with.
Yeah, I agree. I agree that developing that initial foundation for feeling safe is really the only way to move forward. If we don't feel safe, then no other step after that is really going to be effective, I think. So
that's right.
Yeah. And then also as we move forward and we think about like what the next steps would be, or let's say we start to feel more safe, we start to feel a bit more okay with, say, not being okay. And then we're looking at our lives, and then you go through that period where you're like, right, okay, I'm going to start applying this. I feel like this is something that I can try to do in my work, or I feel like this is something I can do with school or something. How, like, can it happen? Is it possible to reframe everything? Like to no longer feel like those expectations you had at the beginning, or what you were, let's say, brought up to believe, or what you thought was always the best. Is it possible to change those things for real?
Indeed. And that's something that I love that question, because I think that's a burning human question that we all ask ourselves. Is change possible? How do I unhook from these damaging ideas? And so in Worth the Risk, I start off by talking about our families of origin and our communities of origin. So it could be schools or other institutions where we're raised and where we develop these kinds of ideas about ourselves and success. So I think it starts by recognizing that we are all the architects of our own experience, mm-hmm. that going along to get along, or faking it till we make it, or just following someone else's blueprint for our life isn't going to foster a life of meaning and joy. So I think it first starts with doing the hard work of thinking about who we are and our multiple identities, what we care about, and what we want to contribute to the world. I think those are all really great questions to start with. And as we get that clarity, that then helps inform our decisions moving forward. I believe it's not like a flip of switch, magical wand kind of thing, but I believe when we do that work of self-understanding, it really can set us up for tremendous momentum and joy as humans, because we can't, if we're following someone else's script or plan for our lives, it is likely to lead to a lot of misery and discontentment.
I agree. And I actually wanted to ask as well, like to compare and contrast a little bit the pop psychology that you referred to at the beginning and, you know, this approach, for example, because I find that often, you know, you'll get pumped with something and be like, oh, okay, yeah, that was pumping. Like you listen to a podcast or, you know, you watch something and you're like, yeah, I can do this. And I find that fades. And it really is just pushing you to do more of what is draining you in the first place a lot of the time, right?
Or right.
That you make it. But when I listen to something that's like deep and connecting, I'm like, oh, this is everything. And then I don't feel the force. I don't feel pumped. I just feel like, oh, okay, I'm good. I'm aligned. Or at the very least, I know how to align myself, or I know how to start, or something like that, you know? Mm-hmm. So what's your take on that? And also maybe comparing and contrasting a little bit what the different messages are.
I love it. I think we have this paradox of today where we have access to more information than we ever did, and access to community, to find affinity groups and to find camaraderie. But there's also group contagion. And I think the other hard thing when it comes to our minds is that a lot of times our minds want to believe what's convenient for us or what makes sense or what feels good. And that's a big issue in pop psychology. And also exciting that in modern brain science, we're overturning some of these old ideas. So specifically, we're realizing that there's been too much emphasis on deficits, on what's not working well, what's wrong, what's broken, what's the matter with somebody. And what research shows is that when we also simultaneously build on our strengths, our capacities, what's working well, that is also a really important point to leverage and to help us grow. So I think just for any of us, we have to be careful what we're consuming. And we have to realize that, again, so much of the science is pointing to the power of our mindsets, behaviors, and habits, that we have brain plasticity, for example, that we can retrain and like you use the word reframe a few times. We can reframe all these old ways and come to a place of greater perspective and purpose in our lives. And so much of it comes by tuning out. You know, I talk a lot in my work about unlearning. It's not always learning new things. Sometimes it's unlearning those old things that hurt us and that make us feel like we have to just like hustle, hustle, hustle in order to be worthy and accepted in this world.
Yeah, it's pretty intense actually. And even sometimes this is on a personal level, but I would think, my God, how could I ever not think like this? And then I was like, maybe one day I'll think this naturally, this automatically with the alternative as I do this. I butchered that sentence a bit, but essentially I was like, wow, this stress that I'm feeling for this, if I work hard enough, maybe I can try to one day have it be the other way around. Like the other way around will be natural for me. Stressing about this will be natural. And I do feel like with consistency and work and like consciously unlearning, as you said, and just allowing your brain to change and yourself to change, you really can. It does become natural to say, whoa, why would I fuss about that? Or that just doesn't faze me as much as it used to. And it feels like, wow, that's it. But it's not, that's it. It took a lot of time. You didn't always realize it, but it is possible. So I really believe, and this is going back to what you'd said before, I really think change is possible. It's not true that it's ever too late or that, oh, that's too ingrained in me. I don't believe that that's true. I just wanted to say that. about unlearning and all of that. And also with that, I wanted to mention, because you talked about connection and community and at the beginning you mentioned loneliness. And I was just wondering what your take is on why loneliness is so damaging to us, actually. Because I don't think we talk about that enough.
Indeed. So first, I just love your reflections on that process of unlearning our automations and knowing that, again, it does take time, but it's worth investing ourselves in. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to connect the dots to your next question around loneliness, what we know when it comes to building resilience is that relationships and community are amongst the most protective factors for our well-being. And so it is a world, you know, obviously the digital world has affected connection. But in addition, I think that there is this tremendous scramble, you know, for anyone out there who's studying or maybe you're caregiving, you're parenting, or like your job is just 80 hours a week, it's super intense. There's a lot of competing priorities, and that can also cause us to be disconnected. And then the other thing, you know, I teach and live in Boston, Massachusetts, in the US. And one thing that is fantastic is, you know, I serve a tremendous number of international students. And that piece, too, for anyone who sees themselves as a global citizen who travels and lives and studies abroad, and then resituates, like you leave your family and community and country of origin. That can be, you know, that whole like third culture identity. It can be difficult to find a place and feel like, you know, that you can find community that gets you. And I think the other thing is, before the pandemic, social anxiety was the fastest growing anxiety spectrum disorder. And that was, again, before all this disruption had occurred. And I think about that every day, honestly. I think about how it can be, especially because we're using more social media to communicate and we're doing much more online interactions than ever before. It feels like our socials, and then obviously with the pandemic and quarantine, our social skills have gotten pretty rusty and we've gotten acclimated to communicating in all different modalities. But I think that it might not necessarily be a substitute for in-person communication and connection. But yeah, it can just feel like, speaking of risk and speaking of like taking those small steps to be more brave and to feel more connected, it's awkward at first. It's not necessarily, you know, our primitive instinct is to be like shy or just like have that panic kind of roll through our system. And I think a lot of us too that are dealing with mental health issues, whether we ourselves are the ones suffering or someone that we're very close to is suffering, that can lead to loneliness too, because we might think we're the only ones, especially when we look at our feeds and everyone seems like all their hashtags seem so positive and their pictures seem so glamorous. And we might be falling into the trap of social comparison. So I think social comparison is a big driving force. Social comparison, social anxiety, those are big forces to loneliness, because then we feel like left out, or we're not achieving enough, or we don't have as many friends as the person on Instagram that's always posting things. So I think we just have to be good thinkers here and realize that we're not alone, and that oftentimes it's anxiety and stress that whispers that to us, like, you know, don't tell anyone, or you're the only one, or like, don't be weird, or just be normal. And like, that isn't going to get us to a place of feeling connected. And I'll say this last thing is that I think about my own friendships. So I have a wonderful cast of characters in my life. I forgot to tell you, I also perform comedy. So I'm a comedian.
Amazing.
And I have a comedy show. So I talk about really heavy stuff in my work. So what better way, you know, to also teach it and also have relief than comedy? So I have like a very interesting range of people in my life. Most of my friends are either therapists, psychiatrists, or comedians. So we have very fun times and interesting conversations.
Yeah.
But I think about like my cast of friends, right? And I call them a cast of characters because they're hilarious, and they are like very unique and dynamic people. But what I'll say is, think of like your friends, like your besties, the people like you can just say anything to without a filter. Like a lot of times those relationships start when the person was willing to put themselves out there and say the exact thing you were feeling, mm-hmm. but too afraid to say it. Like I have this one friend, and she's always like, help. And I don't know, you know, she's like not afraid. Or like I have a colleague once who is like an amazing rock star, and she was like, oh, I have imposter syndrome, I feel like I'm a fraud, I feel like someone's gonna find me out. And I was like, oh my gosh, I didn't even know there was a name for that. That was a few years ago. And I was like, oh, that's exactly how I feel. So I think that this moment in time calls for candor, and that candor can lead to connection. Like, who wants that fake friend that's like, oh yes, everything's fine, I'm good, my life is perfect? Like, I don't really want to hang out with people like that. So I think that's another thing that can help us be more brave and like real in our connections, because like even like what's it called? Oh, the frenemy, like just like being friends with people like for social status, like I don't advocate for that. Like, be friends with the people that you can be raw and real with and completely belly laugh with and like cry with and like all the things, because that's like, that will help stave off any potential loneliness. Because loneliness doesn't mean you don't have anyone around. You can have a ton of people in your life and be completely miserable inside because there's such a disconnect, and it's all like performance based. It's all like what looks good on social media, or like if you're hanging out with people that maybe you're intimidated by, you might like just always try to be in their good graces and try to like be cool or be like what that you think they want you to be. And that's exhausting. Mm-hmm. Like, that's exhausting, and it doesn't breed deep connection.
I agree. I love everything you just said, like very much. I had a huge smile on my face the entire time. I was like, this is brilliant. The show is yours. just take it from here. That was really great. So thank you very much for all of that. But yeah, no, that made a lot of sense. And before I forget everything I wanted to say, I think for one, with social media, it gives the illusion of connection. I mean, now I'm just going to start repeating everything you were saying, but I feel like it does give the illusion of connection. Like, everything is possible. We can connect with people across the world. It's like, but can you though? Like, yes and no, right? I feel like not really. I mean, mm-hmm. I feel like social media can be very, very lonely and kind of depressing, and can be a very like slippery slope. You know, it's very easy to spiral when you're on social media. I don't know. I've often like struggled with my mental health when I was on social media, but also when you connect with someone in person, even if it is a bit awkward, like you said, or we're not used to it because we're doing everything on Zoom or, you know, via emails or FaceTime or whatever, when you actually are in person, it just, there's nothing that compares to it. And I tend to be someone that definitely like recharges on my own, but I like to socialize from time to time, but even I can find that it's like, okay, no, nothing compares to really being with this person or experiencing this whole moment with this person. I do feel like that counts for something. Well, you know what I mean? Like, we like that connection. We like to I don't know, look at each other in the eyes, like for real, you know,
yeah.
And see, and just, I don't know, like pick up energy from each other and cues. And I don't know, you can't always have all of that online, I find. So even mm-hmm. on those micro levels, I feel like in person is so much better. But even just to be around someone, to talk and to even like touch, which I know sounds really weird now in the age of COVID, but you know what I mean? Like, you know, all in good measure, but like, you know, to actually have communication. Yeah. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, I totally
feel you. And I think, you know, it's not weird or anything. I think research really shows like we need human touch. We looking in the eyes, the telomeres in our brain as we tell each other our stories, and like it just has so many positive effects, that deep connection. And it goes back to the point, more isn't necessarily more. It's like even if it's just a little bit of interaction with people that, again, like you can really vibe with and you can really bring out the best in each other and co-inspire, that means so much. And so for anyone out there that's like a little reluctant, I would just encourage, just pick that one person. And it's again, it's hard. Like sometimes I think just like getting the scheduling gods to align, like I feel like it's so much work just to make a coffee date with somebody. It's like, oh my, it's so much work, but I think it's worth putting that effort in. And even if I will also add this footnote, sometimes we have to watch out. I tend to be a very enthusiastic person and I hype things up in my mind's eye. I get like a lot of anticipation, and that dopamine crash can be hard. So I've also really worked on, like, I remember when I first like went back to the office, I was like so excited. And then I felt like very underwhelmed and very triggered and like just sad about all the loss and grief and trauma everyone had gone through. And that took some adjusting for me too. So I think the key thing is just try to like use the word measured before. I like how you put that. Like just have measured expectations, the chip away, just see what is possible and find those like little pockets, like the mini pockets of meaning. Because as we do that for ourselves, we'll see ourselves become more nourished and more apt to be able to continue to put ourselves out there and, you know, find those connections that really uplift us.
Yeah, I love that. I love that very much. And if people are listening right now and are wondering about your book, about any offerings you have going on and how to connect with you, how can they do that?
The best way they can say hi is to reach out through my website, kristinlee.com. I'm also on social media, speaking of social media, at The Real Dr. Kris. So it's The Real DRKRIS. And going there, you can learn more about Worth the Risk. It just hatched on very recently. I know this episode will be evergreen, but it hatched on June 14th, 2022. And it was just named the next Big Idea Club nominee for 2022, which is the book club of Malcolm Gladwell, Daniel Pink, Susan Cain, and Adam Grant. And I'm just very blown away and humbled by that, because I'm really committed to bringing forth the science and these, you know, really important ideas around risk and resilience to everybody, to be able to get something from and to be able to digest it and use it in their lives. And so I do use a lot of humor and a lot of story and a lot of my own quirkiness and my own discoveries in the writing. And I also have a TEDx talk called The Risk You Must Take. So please come to my website, say hi, connect. I do a lot of work with organizations around the world on how to build healthy mental health cultures during this time of the Great Resignation and so much fear. So I'd be happy to connect and, you know, just link arms together, because this is certainly not easy, but that step-by-step microdose approach is really well-grounded. And I think as we have community around us that is striving towards these things, it can really help us not feel alone, and it can help us also to gain the momentum that we need.
I agree. That's wonderful. Thank you very, very much. And honestly, congratulations again on your book and on everything, all your successes. And I will link everything in the show notes, and people can easily access that. But really, thank you so much for everything that you've shared. It's been a real joy to speak to you today.
It was my pleasure. I loved your insights, and I wish you much joy and momentum. Thank you so much.
Thank you. You too.